What's going on, guys? Kevin Estello of Fieldcraft Survival. I'm the host of this advertisement for this podcast. Guys, this podcast is only possible with our sponsors, with the folks that advertise here, and I want to recognize two of them. The first sponsor is Sig Sauer. Guys, Sig Sauer is more than a firearms company. Sig Sauer produces a lot of the accessories for those firearms that they do make, including amazing ammunition. I want to talk to you about that ammunition just for a hot second. I'm a ballistics nerd. I've attended the Sig Sauer Academy, precision scope rifle, advanced precision scope rifle, reach for 1,000. When I was living out in Utah and we were using the Kafaru property out there, I mean, I was shooting out to 980 yards on a regular basis. And I'll tell you some of the best ammo that I found to do that, Sig Sauer ammunition. Something that you should know about their ammo in ballistics and long range shooting, you got to know what standard deviation is between the rounds. You don't want one round that's going, say, 2,600 feet per second and another round that's going 2,400 feet per second out of the same lot. Well, the Sig ammo has a very, very low standard deviation. That's what I've found. We're talking only 5 feet per second, which is very negligible. So I love the stuff that Sig puts out there. They make great, great ammo, including some really good ammo for their 365. They have a special round that is designed for that pistol and other short micro compact pistols like the 365. So I'm a huge fan of Sig and I'm very thankful for them being, you know, one of the podcast sponsors. And of course, if you are going to train and you're going to carry a pistol, maybe you're going to carry their ammunition, then I would recommend that you guys train at the Sig Sauer Academy. It's up in New Hampshire, and they also have training around the country, but that's their primary location. And the Sig training is awesome. You can do everything from pistol to carbine to shotgun to precision scope rifle. You name it, you can do it there. So guys, please head over to SigSauer.com. Take a look at all the things that they have to offer. Now, there's another company that I want to recommend, and it's what I currently have in my tumbler right here, and that is Hoist. Hoist Hydration. There is a 10% off discount if you use the code FIELDCRAFT10. That is FIELDCRAFT10. Guys, go to the website, www.drinkhoist.com. Hoist Hydration is pretty awesome because it has very little sugar. If you spend a lot of time working out, you need to replace your electrolytes. Hoist is a great drink to do that. In addition, Hoist has no artificial colors. So, you know, you go to the store and like you want to get an energy drink, and a lot of people, mainly kids, get attracted by like the bright colors that they see in the refrigerator. Well, you're not going to find that with Hoist, but you are going to find a drink that is going to help you rehydrate. And it's used by a lot of elite athletes. Our instructors here at the company love Hoist. When I was out in Utah, we'd get cases of Hoist, and every once in a while, I'd be able to steal one or two away from our marketing director, who has a whole refrigerator of it. So if you guys ever go to our tower office, or if you ever run by his office, go to his refrigerator. Maybe he'll never notice it. Take a couple of the bottles, try it out. I think you're going to love it. Guys, Hoist Hydration is awesome stuff. I found it nationally, right? You can probably find it in your grocery store, or you, like I said, you can go to www.drinkhoist.com and you can use that coupon code FIELDCRAFT10 and get yourself a discount off of Hoist. So I'm going to tell you, it's good stuff. You know, people say you need to hydrate. I agree. Most people are walking around dehydrated. Well, you might want to do something about that. You might want to drink Hoist. All right, guys, here we go. Let's get to this podcast. Hey guys, welcome to the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. I'm going to be your host for this episode, but I got a co-host this time who's in the studio with us, who's going to be talking about a whole bunch of stuff that's been happening here at the company, including a very successful second run of the shotgun class. We got Jerry Young with us today, but then we're going to be looking at the, what is this thing called? Is the
Range Med Kit.
Range Med Kit, not Shooter Med Kit. I screwed up the other day. I called it Shooter Med Kit, but I guess when you're at the range, you're a freaking shooter, I hope. So, 50,000 views. Let's start there. So I put up a reel from the shotgun class that we just ran that Jerry hosted over at the Gray Farm. Shout out to John Welk. And it got 30,000 views. And then our guy, Drew, posted up on the Fieldcraft proper page today, 1,500 likes, 20,000 plus views in about 8 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys are liking the shotgun content. Jerry is bringing you the shotgun content, man. Where do we even begin with that class? It was awesome.
It was a lot of fun.
And compared to the first one, how was it different for you?
It was more organized. Mm-hmm. We had worked out some of the kinks in the first round, and we were just better prepared for the second one, I think.
Yeah. And if you guys have been following Fieldcraft for some time, Jerry's been one of our adjunct instructors for a long time, helping out with breakout and the med classes and survival classes. But his background's in law enforcement, firearms instructor, shotgun instructor. I mean, I've been, you know, training with Jerry for decades at this point, almost two decades, close enough. But the first class that we did out in Utah, we had, what, 18 students?
Yes.
A wider range, mm-hmm. quite literally wider range. This one, the range is a little smaller, so we capped it at 14. And the main critique the last time was, oh, you should have gone over manipulations, right? And, oh, you know, there were too many malfunctions. So we said, guys, bring pump shotguns. And how many autos did we still have show up?
Let's see, there was three Benellis, a Beretta.
Mossberg. Mossberg, 944, I think.
Yeah, 930 or something.
930, some nomenclature, I don't know. The pump guns ran.
There was a couple of hiccups with them, but it could have been operator error.
It was definitely operator error on that one. But guys, when we say bring a pump shotgun, please bring a pump shotgun. The one Benelli that showed up had a 14.5-inch barrel, and it shot better than my 20-inch Mossberg. And we were like, that is the freaking anomaly. What was your take on that? What did we decide it was?
It has to be the choke that, or the forcing cone that they have in that weapon, because I literally thought the guy was shooting slugs for the first three or four rounds.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. That gun, when it came out, we're like, oh, that's just the wad. And we're like, he must have missed the target or something. And then we look and we're like, no, it was basically a rifle.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, the funniest thing for me was when we were shooting the birds, and he still was crushing it with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was new for this year. What was new for this time around, Jer?
So we did, the clay pigeons were new. Mm-hmm. We reorganized so that there was less downtime in between when we were divided the class in half. We had a safe loading zone where they would just load the magazines of their shotguns. Mm-hmm. And then we had a firing line, which made it easier to just keep things moving along. We did a penetration test where we fabricated an interior wall, which was a stud wall with two pieces of half-inch sheetrock. Mm-hmm. And then the other wall simulated an exterior wall. So it had half-inches sheetrock, fiberglass insulation, three-quarter mm-hmm. inch plywood, and vinyl siding on the outside, and then placing a target that we were shooting at in between the walls and outside the walls. And it was very eye-opening to a lot of people, I think.
How so? Go into it.
So we also, before we destroyed the targets and walls with the shotgun, we actually shot a 9mm full metal jacket, a 9mm mm-hmm. hollow point, and a 223 full metal jacket. Of course, 223 went right through all the targets, exited, including it went through a stud. The 9mm ball went right through all the walls and exited. The hollow point 9mm also went through everything, but it actually started to expand as it's supposed to after it made impact with the first layer of sheetrock. And then we shot buckshot, which went through all the walls and exited. Slug obviously did. What really surprised me was the birdshot. The mm-hmm. birdshot went through the target, two layers of sheetrock, and embedded in the third layer of sheetrock. And we had the walls spaced out 12 feet to simulate a typical room.
Yeah, it was one of those fun things where it kind of broke up the momentum of the class, right? Like, we started here in our training center in North Carolina and Aberdeen. In the classroom, you showed some pretty interesting photos. We won't go into detail. You had to be there. We went over proper loading. We went over accessories that you want to have in the firearm. You know, even like little things like people were saying like, oh, which weapon light? We showed them Streamlight options. We showed them Surefire options. What optics you put on the gun? What sling? I know you were running the GBRS sling, which shout out to those guys.
Yeah, that GBRS sling is the money. I've spent a lot of money on slings and have a box of slings, mm-hmm. and that GBRS sling I think the second best sling is like, it's slick. There's no tension, but yet it locks up when you go to move it. So,
and those guys call it the second best sling, but there's a reason for that, right?
Yeah, I think they're just like busting chops. So they don't want to say they have the best sling. So saying they had the second best sling, well, in my opinion, is the best. But
yeah, it's pretty incredible. So we showed like the gear that you can carry. We showed safe loading, safe unloading, positional shooting. We had all the guys laying out on the floor. Then we did like a quick like 30-minute lunch and then time to get to the range. They got to the range and immediately it was, let's pattern the buckshot. Let's give you a chance to shoot some slugs, do some select slug drills. I mean, it went way smoother than the first one.
Yeah. And we also, before we left and went to the range for live fire, we were able to show them and give them the opportunity to attempt to use the shotgun for room clearing to simulate if you're checking the house. So we turned off lights and obviously we made sure right from the beginning that, you know, safety was a big issue. And, you know, so we didn't make sure there was no live rounds, even in the building.
Yeah, we were using these snap caps and man, even in preparation for the class, shipping on these was insane.
Shipping was locating them was also insane.
Yeah, like you buy like a pack of five snap caps and you spend maybe like $10 on them, but then shipping was like 12. And then, you know, we found another one which kind of gave us both a little bit of pucker factor, the Fiocchi ones that had the rounds on the inside.
Yeah, they actually had the shot in, so it'll simulate the same weight, but a couple of guys were using them and I was like, whoa, and ended up they verified that they were dummy rounds. So
when I was 15 years old, my oldest sister took me to a gun show in Springfield, Massachusetts, the home of the Biggie, right? Eastern States Exposition. And I remember being 15. I went to this gun show just to look at knives and someone kicked off a shotgun round into the ceiling. And my God, it was one of those experiences where it was like so easy to make that mistake. Like, what are you looking for when you're clearing a gun? Most people would say, oh, I'm looking for brass. Well, you should be looking for an empty chamber. Someone probably, and I can only speculate, they probably were like, oh, the gun's empty. And they pulled the trigger and it sent the round into the ceiling. There's no margin of error with a shotgun, guys. Like a handgun can screw you up. A rifle is definitely going to screw you up. A shotgun, I think Clint Smith said it, right? Like with the proper load will leave what did he say? Like a proper load will leave a bag of shit on the ground or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Only in Clint Smith's, you know, voice. I don't even want to try to copy it. But that class was awesome. John Welk ran the drone and, you know, we put up the reel about the course, you know, to Limp Bizkit, 30,000 views. And then we got to do this. I don't care. We're going to respond to some of your comments, guys, on our video. So you guys can hear the music. Yeah. Listen to that. That's Drew Wallace right there posting up music to this. And we have 17 comments at the, you know, at the start of this podcast here. So let's see. In this, we were saying that if you guys want to see more shotgun courses, comment below. And a lot of people said, yes, in North Carolina. Guys, this one was in North Carolina. You want to run this one again, Jer?
Oh, yeah. Hell absolutely.
Yeah. someone wants it in Vegas. Are you open to going to Vegas?
I'll go to Vegas.
Yeah, I knew you would. Okay. So now here's a comment. And guys, I'm gonna read these word for word. AG Law said, my problem with shotguns for home defense is they play right into Biden's narrative, get you a double barrel and just blast away. No, if I want an actual Dillon minigun mounted the ceiling of my garage to repel would-be burglars, invaders, North Korean paratroopers, that's my God-given right. Okay. A guy replied, he said, spend $2,000 on the Benelli M4 with a ridiculous extended tube. Be a man. We kind of covered Biden's, you don't even have to aim it, right?
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you do, because people say you can't miss with a shotgun. And before I started with field craft and law enforcement, people would almost probably twice a range, and that's in a week's time, would miss the target and shoot the wire because our target's hung from wires and we'd have to replace the whole wire cable. Because if you're not using an optic and you don't drop your cheek down and get a cheek weld on that shotgun, you're going to miss because you're just kind of pointing.
Yeah. Not to mention at close distances, it's not expanding.
Correct.
Right. Like in depending on what you guys are shooting, it may or may not leave that. Is it technically the sabot or like, what is it called? The cup?
The wadding.
The wadding, yeah. Like your load might not leave the wadding. This comment comes from this guy, KRK Just Mike. The Beretta 1301 might be single-handedly responsible for the resurgence in shotgun usage right now. I think the market was primed for something new since the AR and AK have been the focus for so many years. Several new semi-auto shotguns in the last few years, and pumps are making a comeback too. Round for round, pump guns are some of the most fun things to shoot. I think we're full swing into shotgun dominance at the moment. Thoughts?
Well, as you said that, I thought of another thing that could be leading to the shotguns making a comeback.
And what's that?
I have to give a shout out to Jack Carr in the terminal list because Benelli was running one of those episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, I think Taylor Kitsch, was that a Benelli or a Beretta?
I think it was a Benelli.
Okay. Well, Taylor Kitsch, whoever put that gun in his hand, it was set up properly. And, you know, it was kind of cool. You actually saw him say like, hold on, I'm going to need like what, 10 seconds to reload. He's mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm ready. Like, it wasn't one of these Hollywood movies where they drew too heavily from the competition world where he's already loaded in a second. You know what I mean? Like they actually took that pause and he said, okay, I'm ready to go again. We've got a call pretty soon with Beretta. I'm going to talk to those guys. Shout out to Jeremy Brito for putting me in contact with Beretta. Guys, I would love to do some more semi-auto content with you. I don't have any time on the Beretta other than kind of fiddling with it a little bit at gun stores. And it's one of those guns that I would love to get a sample of even for 180 days and let Jerry run it super hard or, you know, see how many rounds we can put through it before it malfunctions. But that gun is fast.
I may have to get a Benelli.
Well, yeah.
Just so I can have it to practice with and train with.
Yeah. You've got the pension fairy coming. So yeah, I don't blame you for that one. Which of the Benellis is your go-to? Like, did you have one on the SWAT team?
No.
No?
No. We just had 870s.
Okay.
But I like that 14. Like that 14 and a half that guy had the other day. That is a sweet shooting gun.
Well, now that you're in free America, you're not living in communist New York. You can get suppressors and you were carrying the P320 on your belt with the threaded barrel. I think a 9mm suppressor is in your future.
Yeah, that it is. There's a lot in my future, but
yeah, I know. But you also have to take care of,
I have a family too.
Yeah. So. And your daughter is going to be stealing all those guns when she turns of age. I'm convinced.
It already is.
All right. Got another comment here. Father always taught me you only need three weapons, pistol, rifle, and shotgun. Shotgun for the house, pistol for your hip, rifle for the truck. Can't go wrong. Thoughts?
Well, it's true. I mean, who was it? Jeff Cooper that said the only good reason for a handgun is to fight your way to a rifle.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I mean, I guess I was brought up on that three gun rule too, but it was a shotgun, a 22, and then a center fire rifle for take a big game.
Yeah. And I guess it's all dependent on where you are, right? Like if you're in the woods, self-defense isn't as much of a concern if you're like way out in the middle of nowhere. But if you're in an urban environment, you have less likely of a chance of bumping into, you know, say like a grizzly bear. So you need to worry about the two-legged critters.
I'd have to go up to four nowadays though, because you do need a self-defense handgun.
Yeah.
And you do need a 22 handgun.
Yeah. The poaching gun.
Mm-hmm. Suppressed.
Suppressed, of course. Guys, I mean, your comments are all good here. You know, Kate said, crushing it, Jerry. Of course, we want to get Kate on the range. Kate has one of like the most mild-mannered voices. Like she's so quiet. I want to see Kate get behind a big old gun and blast away and let out some anger. Like she's so physical, like she's a tough girl, tough woman, but I want to see her like blast away with a 44 mag or something.
Yeah. She's got enough time in CrossFit gym where she can mitigate recoil.
Yeah. No doubt about that. What were some of the big takeaways this time around that we didn't hear last time? Like what'd you pick up on? Cause I know you're always tracking the AAR and what people are saying. Like what was your big takeaway this time as an instructor?
We tried to have everything more organized.
Mm-hmm.
And of course everybody wants us to work miracles and condense more time into, you know, 6 hours of training, which we can't. I guess part of it was people said they wanted like us to have supplies there. So like when people were running, you know, a Walmart sling or something along mm-hmm. those lines that just wasn't up to speed. Like I gave a adjustable 2-point sling, not my GBRS sling, to a guy so he could use that. And like, if we'd had stuff there, like I'm sure we could have sold stuff.
And that's something that we're working on, guys. Obviously we listen to you when we run these classes, but keep in mind, I mean, as a company, we got to make a profit when we run things, and it's difficult for us to justify buying slings for everyone. So when you show up, you just borrow one of ours, because we always end up losing stuff. We always end up having stuff go home with students, and students not want to hand things in. And I'm not calling out students, but I'm just saying, like, it just happens, right? Or stuff gets broken. And ultimately, like, if you're serious about taking a course, whether it's a shooting class or a survival class or whatever, if you're willing to take the class, you should be willing to buy some gear. And even if it's not the ultimate gear that you end up with, you get gear that you can, you know, keep as a backup in case your primary goes down or something like that. So, you know, we always listen to you. Like, next time we probably will have a handful of extra slings, because I mean, the other option, we don't want guys showing up with paracord wrapped around the shotgun, like we did during breakout class, right? Like that was a sling.
There was a paracord tied on a gun there. So
was there really?
Yes,
there
was.
I don't even want to call out the guy who did it, but guys, like simple things like, you know, Jerry the night before sent out an email to all the students saying like, hey, bring this, bring that. And you guys listen, what we're going to start doing with all of our courses is like, if the main instructor has recommendations for gear, we're going to start putting that in the class. Like, hey, look, you might want to get a 2-point sling that's adjustable. We recommend GBRS, VTAC, Blue Force gear, or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, like, it's your gun. You know what I mean? It's your setup. There's one guy running shotgun shells out of a shoulder bag, right?
Yeah, it worked for him.
Yeah, totally worked. I had an SOE gear shotgun vest. You had a Spirita system set up. But guys, ultimately, like, we just need you to show up with ammo, the gun, food, water, that type of thing. We're probably going to cut down the round count too, right?
We were having them bring a lot more and we just weren't shooting it.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll make it a little more economical for people to go take the course.
And then next time we'll probably do another one here. We'll probably do one somewhere out west. At some point we got to do an advanced shotgun.
That was what I was just going to say. So the other thing this course did is kind of created more work for us in a good way. Mm-hmm. Now we got to figure out a way to develop it. And that was part of the thing is they were talking about, like, you know, how do you tell people, like, well, you haven't been to the introduction one, you know, how can you take the intermediate one? And we talked about possibly doing like a phone interview or a Zoom interview just to mm-hmm. get an idea to make sure the person's not lying being honest that, well, yeah, I can run a shotgun and they can't.
Yeah. In their mind, they can. You know, we had a student that showed up and he said that he shot 6 rounds like 12 years ago and he shot 6 rounds recently. And it's like, that's not even a couple boxes of birdshot. You know what I mean? Like, not even a full box of birdshot. So it's like, we want to make sure you guys are getting the education that you need at the right time. There's always the student that might have too much skill for a basic class, right? And they might be sandbagging. But then there's always the student that overestimates their ability and then they slow the whole class down. Look, in the future, if that is the case, you know, Jerry and I were talking and John was talking and we were saying, like, if we find that a student can't be safe or isn't keeping up, we're totally cool with saying, look, you might want to just sit this one out, go home, come back to the next one. We'll put you in the right spot. You can use the credit from this class for the next one, but we got to keep the class going because, I mean, it's a new course for Fieldcraft. You're the only one, Jerry, that's teaching it, the whole company. Like, there's pistol, there's carbine, there's precision rifle. No one's teaching shotgun but you. So right.
I'm sure some of those other people are more than capable of teaching this class.
Mm. Speaking of that, it was funny that we had a guy in our class. The first class, we had an Asian. Shout out to all the Asians out there that run pump guns. Who ran the shotgun better than anyone else. And turns out he was LAPD and, you know,
in their shotgun cadre. And
Yeah. This time around we had an Asian and he was a breacher in the military. And he's like, this thing intimidates me because the only thing I've had to shoot were doorknobs at like 3 inches away. Mm-hmm. We saw some guys really, really pick up their skill level. Like we had folks that showed up with bare-boned 870s, bare-boned 590 A1s, the Benellis. But by the end, like, no one was asking how you properly load. No one was asking how you properly unload. Like, when you do enough dry reps in the warehouse here and then go out to the range, you kind of mitigate those problems, those slowdowns. And I would say that that went smoother than the first time around.
Hey guys, it's Amber L here, and I wanted to tell you about one of our partners. It's Athletic Greens. But more specifically, I wanted to tell you about AG1 by Athletic Greens. And if you're familiar with my lifestyle at all, or follow me in any capacity, you know that I have really taken ownership of my health and wellness over the last year. And I hold myself to new standards, and I've implemented some really strict disciplines that have extremely increased my overall wellness and vitality. And that's so important to me as a mom, but also for someone who takes their own self-defense and their own empowerment really seriously. And so one place where I feel like we all fall short is trying to keep up with our supplement routine. And AG1 is a life hack of sorts. And I love life hacks. And it's an all-in-one formula that makes it easy for me to cover my nutritional bases every day. One scoop is packed with 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients. And not just of basic average quality, but of really great quality. That's very important to me because of the bioavailability and the way that my body utilizes it. And so you get those benefits like gut and mood support and boosted energy and healthy looking skin, hair, and nails. And we all want that. So if you're looking for an easier way to take your supplements and you want to give them a try, Athletic Greens will give you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. So you can go to athleticgreens.com/fieldcraft to check them out. That's athleticgreens.com/fieldcraft. And then I also want to tell you about a Women's Warrior Hunt Retreat, and it's combined with a 3D archery shoot over in California, right outside of San Diego. This will be May 31st to June 4th. This will be my second time attending this retreat, and I will be there with other team members where we will be outlining how your survival and your preparedness and self-reliance make you so much more capable and ready to get out there this hunting season. It's going to be amazing. And I can't wait to meet all of you guys. So if any of those things sound good to you and you feel called to really push yourself this year, I highly suggest you come out and meet us. This is what we love to do, is to train with you guys. So check out our website so you can read more about it. And I hope you guys enjoy the rest of the podcast.
What's next? Like, what would be the next step up? Like, obviously we got to secure the targets because there was a freaking windstorm.
Right. Like, yeah, that was definitely bad on us. Mm-hmm. I mean, and yep, just poor planning on our part. Like, we literally were assembling the steel hangers as we got there on the range as students were showing up. So I was thinking that, like, a quick way to do that would be, like, sandbag. So, you know, secure them. I mean, we did okay. We didn't have any blow off or anything like that. I mean, mm-hmm, the whole target backer and stand was tipping over, including the steel.
Yeah.
So we need to secure them. That new steel, thank you very much, Casey, for mm-hmm helping us get some of that. It was that made the class go faster also, because we were able to run 6 at a time shooting steel.
Yeah.
Safely, and then not have to worry about it.
Yeah. And I think for the advanced class, we're going to incorporate more movement. We're going to incorporate bounding from barrier to barrier, shooting bilaterally, different shoulders, different shooting positions. You were being way too kind on them. Like, the Jerry from, like, 15 years ago would have been like, dudes, you are getting down shooting prone slugs 50 rounds.
But well, I let him, I had him do one because I didn't want to have people injured. I wanted them to enjoy the class. But yeah, a while ago, I would have been like, yeah, suck it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And the funny thing was, there were some groans when they shot that.
Oh, sure there was.
Yeah.
That.
I think what we need to do next time is we need to bring in some turkey loads too, because turkey loads, I think compared to a slug, they might be worse.
They're definitely worse. Like, I have the 535 Ultimag, the Mossberg, and it shoots 3.5-inch turkey mm-hmm loads out of it. It's extra power, heavy load, 1.25 or 1.5 shot. And every time I shoot that gun, I feel like I just got punched in the head.
Yeah.
Just get that echo ringing and
rattles your teeth.
Deadly on turkeys, but I almost brought it to let people shoot, but
Yeah. And I'm hoping that if we do have a good meeting with Beretta later on, you know, we can get a really cool auto loader that runs like a top, because it is really exciting when you watch. It's a whole like visceral experience when you shoot a Beretta auto loader, or I should say any auto loader. I used to shoot the 1187, and when you pull the trigger on that thing and you watch this massive shotgun shell leave, you know, the ejection port, and the last class when we watched that one guy shoot the targets, like it was so fast. Man, yeah, we need to get one of those. I think we need to get one just for students to try out. We'll sell more Berettas than anyone else.
Then we'll just, that way I mean, why I would spend the money on one of myself also would just to be so that when people show up with them as an instructor, we know the mm-hmm. ins and outs of them a little more than I admittedly don't know. I'm not as familiar with them.
Yeah. And you know, it's going to happen. I mean, thank God we didn't get anyone that showed up with a shotgun that you had to mortar or a shotgun that you had to, you know, kickstart or.
Yes. No AR style shotguns were there. Yeah.
And I mean, with those guns, when they're tuned right, like a Sega shotgun, pretty badass, right? My buddy George has one, and I've shot that thing, and it's awesome. But guys, stick with your 870s, stick with your 590s if you want a good pump gun. And if you want to play with the auto loaders, get a quality auto loader, get a Beretta or a Benelli, just make sure the damn thing runs. We got something here, and I know at one point, Jerry, you're going to kind of load this thing up, so I'm just curious, like your take on this. Guys, here in the North Carolina office, we don't get all of the inventory from Utah, but we did put in a request for these range med kits. And, you know, Jerry saw them the other day, and Jerry's background is as a medic. So it's kind of, you know, frothing at the mouth. So kind of just talk us through what you got in there, Jerry. And I know that this was built with you and Nate Jones.
No, like, I had nothing to do with this. No, Nate gets the credit for this one and whoever helped him. But obviously Nate knows his business also when it comes to being a medic. And when I saw the stuff that was in this, I was like, wow, that is spot on.
And it's based off March, right?
Yeah. So like, the first of all, I mean, just like the bag alone is meant to be, it's got the MOLLE attachment, so meant to be put on a, you know, a war belt or an instructor belt. And then it's Velcro to the top with a pull handle on it. When you open it, it's got elastic bands to put stuff in. There's pockets in there. And it's also a bright color so that you can just see the contrast of other stuff. So, I mean, the pouch alone is like...
spot on.
Yeah. And then in there, of course, you know, you start with the March principle. And those aren't familiar with it. March is massive hemorrhaging, airway, respiration, circulation, and head injury, hypothermia. So it's just it's an assessment tool that we teach heavily. So right off the bat, there's a bright colored orange soft T tourniquet. And so the other thing they added in there was the Olay's modular bandage, and it actually has Hemcon in it for the blood stop agent, and it's got Cheeto gauze in it. And I believe this one is the one where you open it and behind the absorbent pad, there's actually Z-folded gauze in there, which has the coagulating agent in it. And then it's a pressure bandage also. That's also part of the March. And there's some gauze in here for wound packing. What else they have in here? That's probably going to be it for the... Oh, there's a set of nitrile gloves in here, so protecting you and others.
And purple, right? Like, purple. So you can actually see the blood.
Right, that's what it is. Like, everybody has those nice tactical black gloves, but they're awful when you're doing a blood sleep, because unless you can see it shining on there, it's you may miss blood. What else they have in here? So for airway is going to be more of a positional thing, where you're either going to manually get that airway open or positionally by putting it in a recovery position. And then respirations. So there's a set of chest seals in here. So if you have a punctured thoracic cavity, when you're worried about air getting in, you're going to put that chest seal on. And then for circulation, It's going to be more so respiratory circulation. So you're going to be looking for like shock. So to help mitigate the shock, there's a shock or, you know, you're going to just be checking the skin temperature, condition, color, all that stuff. There is a survival blanket in here, which is going to help with the circulation. It's going to keep the body warm so it doesn't go into shock, but it's also going to help the hypothermia. There's a chem light in here, which would be good to mark, you know, the wounded or, you know, just remember where you're putting stuff down. Some other stuff they had in here. There's a set of trauma shears, which you would probably use first if you had to expose a wound. There's a couple of solid eye shields. So if you have an eye injury, there is a burn dressing, which, you know, people think that like, oh, we're not going to do it. But, you know, you could get a burn from, actually, we did get a burn in one of the breakouts from a hot receiver on a PKM, but not everybody's shooting them. But yeah, there's a burn dressing in here, duct tape, which is, you know,
million one uses. Yeah.
And then there's actually a boo-boo kit in here. So there's actually different size Band-Aids and not the little useless ones that really don't do anything. They're just three standard size Band-Aids in there. Sharpie marker, so you could mark the time when you apply a tourniquet, or maybe you want to write the subject's vitals down as you're, you know, assessing them.
Not to mention drawing cock and balls on targets.
Yes,
when you,
if you
on
have
range.
To draw that it, yes. on targets. Yeah, you,
yeah
you
very, very that. Important.
But you shouldn't use your range kit for that stuff. You should have your own Sharpie for that.
Dedicated cock and balls Sharpie. You know what's interesting? Like that, the boo-boo kit, I don't know how many times you've experienced this, but I've been to shooting classes and I've seen people get slide bite or they're clearing a malfunction or, you know, they get down on their knee too quickly and, you know, they get an insect bite or something, like something. And everyone's got quick clot. Everyone's got a tourniquet. No one has like a stupid little finger bandage. Like why do people forget that? Like
it's because they want to go for the old tactical cool stuff where, and honestly, I use Band-Aids more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. And you said that your bandage preference are the butterfly bandages, right? Like the knuckle bandages?
Yeah, I use the, actually the fingertip ones, mm-hmm. the fingertip or the knuckle ones. So the knuckle ones are kind of like H shaped.
Yeah.
And it, but the fingertip ones are kind of like two triangles made it together. So the wide ends are out and it just gives you more adhesive. So if you have to do a fingertip, it's fine. If you have to do, you know, anywhere else, it just, you had that more adhesive on there. And the same with H, it just, it has extra adhesive just in a different way.
Yeah. I like this kit. I mean, I've got so much medical gear. I can't justify even with an employee discount buying like another med kit, but like this one's well done. And I think that it's smart. Like you said, it's smart. Everything is well designed. I don't know. How would you package that thing? Like, where would you put things? Cause like when you guys buy this from us, I don't know if Utah is going to be selling them already stowed or if you're going to receive the two bags like we received here where you have the carrying container and then you've got the you've got all the components loose. But like, how would you prefer to set that up, Jer?
Well, first thing I would do is like take a lot of the stuff out of the package. I'm not gonna, because somebody's probably gonna buy this one.
Oh, you could do it on that one. That's our demo.
Well, this is the demo one.
Yeah,
so
go nuts
when you open with the pull down zipper in the front. I would set this up in the way that I would want to access that. So just following that whole March assessment, so I know that, you know, massive bleeding is going to be one of my first concerns. So I would put the tourniquet right on this outside pocket or the lid of the pocket so that when you're drawing it, you know, if you need a tourniquet, it's going to be the first thing you grab. Mm-hmm. I mean, ideally you'd probably want it somewhere on your belt, but two is one and one is none. We put this on this outside thing. And the elastic is very sturdy too.
Yeah, you gotta break that thing in a little bit.
So we'd have that in there. And the next thing I would probably have is put this Hemcon Olay's bandage right here. So that it can be pulled out.
So just for you guys listening, he's putting it on like the main body of the pack, and there's like a large elastic on the outside of the red pocket.
And then I would probably put the gauze for additional wound packing, probably right behind it.
Okay.
I put all three of those. Put the bandage, extra gauze for wound packing, and the chest seals right behind that. Scissors would also be buried.
Yeah, no, they're right here. There you go.
Scissors would also be right towards the outside, probably tuck them right behind the tourniquet so it's the tourniquet's accessible, but so is the scissors. The burn dressing, probably put in this, there's numerous back pockets, stick that in there. The boo-boo kit, put that in, back in there.
So it seems like it's just kind of like when you're packing a backpack for the backcountry, you want stuff that you need immediately up at the very top. Certain things that you don't need to access right away. Like no one's in a rush to make, you know, ramen noodles when you get to a campsite. So you put that kind of like lower down.
Right.
You're prioritizing what needs to go where based on where it is in the pack.
Right. And, you know, gloves, that'd be another thing I'd put like right towards the top of the kit.
Okay. You know, we were, Nate Jones and I were messaging back and forth, and he said the only thing that you should have in your EDC already that's not included here, but it kind of is with the chem light, is just make sure you have a headlamp or you have a small flashlight.
Yeah, I set all my med kits up like that. I have a headlamp hooked right to wherever the zipper is,
mm-hmm.
so that when I unzip it, if it's dark out, that's the first thing I can grab is a headlamp. And shout out to Streamlight, but I have a big, bright Streamlight headlamp that's way more than's needed. But, you know, if you're going to work on someone in the dark, you want to make sure you've got plenty of light to see what's going on.
One of the things that came up with my meeting with Streamlight earlier this week, I was hanging out with my buddy Kevin Berger down in Tampa, actually in Odessa, Florida. He said that a lot of guys want a red light headlamp as opposed to just a white light. Did you ever come across that? I mean, you did the tactical med in addition to the regular med.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, honestly, from like deer hunting and tracking deer, a blue light is better at seeing blood.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, you know, the red light's going to be saving your night vision. And, you know, maybe that has something to do with, you know, nods and that kind of stuff, which I'm not even going to address that because I'm, that's definitely not me. But
that's the next pension fairy visit, right? You're buying nods and you can hold off on buying your daughter a car. You know, she's got a few years.
Yeah, I like to think that I don't need that anymore, but
need versus want here.
So yeah, it's definitely, you know, you could pack it in here and see everything. It's going to kind of be like a puzzle packing it in there, but it's definitely all going to fit.
Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of medical kits over the years that I've seen. I'm not going to mention any names, but when you buy them, they're like, oh, 112 piece medical kit. And they're counting like individual bandages. And whenever you get a kit like that, they always want you to like, you know, customize it, put your own crap in it. Is there anything else that you would add to this other than maybe that headlamp? And
I don't think so. I mean, like for a range, I mean, this is more of like a extended blowout kit is what this is. You've got a couple extra things, but it could cover like your minor, like you're talking about, your little nicks you could get from, you know, operating the weapons, and then right up to, you know, a gunshot wound. I would have to say, but, you know, yeah, the headlamp would probably be the only other thing I would add to this.
You know, and I think like the whole design philosophy behind that one was like, it's going on your person. Most of the time, like when you're running a shooting class, like I remember you pulled it out at the shotgun class, you have a whole backpack that's like a dedicated med kit, which, you know, this is good if you're treating yourself or treating your buddy or whatever, but it's really like a stopgap until you get the bigger gear.
Right.
You know, so, and this won't, as good of a kit that, as this is, like you're still going to need to go to the hospital and seek higher, you know, higher care. Yeah, it is a little bit of a puzzle. You're also dealing with like all that new plastic that hasn't folded just yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put a big sign out in the showroom and be like, dude, do not open this unless you're willing to spend time to put it all together.
Oh, forgot the gloves.
Nice. So while you're finishing that up, let's talk about another thing. We've got the Advanced Survival Experience coming up in October. And advanced survival experience is what you guys have been asking for. We've got a level one class, which is one day. We've got my civilian survival school, or the, you know, 2 day survival class. It's also referred to. That's a 20 hour course with an overnight. That one really addresses like 72 hour survival scenarios. But then there's the advanced survival experience. We're going to run it for the first time in Ware Shoals, South Carolina, but then we're also going to do one out in Washington State. What a lot of you folks don't know is that Jerry and I have been, we go back to advanced survival training at the old Wilderness Learning Center where I used to teach. And Jerry was a student there during one of the advanced courses where I forgot who it was in your course that put the hot sauce Da Bomb in my sandwich. Do you remember that? Were you there for that one?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, that might have been the other advanced class that was there. But someone put Da Bomb hot sauce. Actually, it was Mitch. It was the pilot Mitch. Okay. He put it in my sandwich. Guys, advanced survival training is a little bit different than, say, like your 72-hour emergency scenario, because we're going into like longer term. You know, 72 hours, you don't have to worry about food so much. But long term, you do. And that's going to come down to fishing. So I just wanted to kind of like pick Jerry's brain, and maybe you guys will benefit from listening to Jerry's advice. A lot of what we're going to do in that advanced survival experience is what Jerry went through in the advanced class when we did our 3-day exercise. Limited food, living in primitive shelters. You guys are not going to be able to bring a tent or anything like that. You probably are going to deal with snakes. There's going to be a lot of black snakes in South Carolina. You probably will be able to go catfishing. And I know you had a particular way you want to see people eat catfish. So any advice, Jer, on what people should do for advanced survival training?
Embrace the suck. I mean, yeah. Like it is a lot of fun, but you don't realize when you're not getting the calories in, you're not used to, you know, you're not getting your morning coffee in, you know, mm-hmm. and you're expending a lot of calories. Like we caught minnows in a mosquito head net, and we were boiling them up with water and eating them just because I was hungry.
Yeah. What about from day one to day two, or I should say night one to night two, because anyone can spend one night in the woods, right? You wake up the next morning, maybe you're a little groggy, but eventually that lack of sleep catches up to you. Would you have any advice for people if they're sleeping in a natural shelter from night one to night two?
It's kind of the whole PSYOC thing. Better weapon, better position. You know, your first night, you're going to see all the things that are wrong with it. So the next day, when you get time, you make that shelter better. And like we got our shelters built that class, and mm-hmm. the sky opened up. So mm-hmm. everybody got to see how their shelters were going to hold up. And I mean, it was warm summertime, so it wasn't like a hypothermia issue or anything
right,
like that. But
right.
yeah, you definitely improve everything you're doing each day.
What about for critters, like the wiggles, the mosquitoes, all the stuff on the ground? Like it's going to get nasty. Like there's yeah, no doubt in my mind.
Just you're better off not turning your headlight on at night, especially inside there. Because I found out that spiders like look like glitter when you turn it on, and you light it up inside your debris shelter, and all it is looks like stars inside there. So you just tighten everything up and mm-hmm. tuck your socks in and cover up and go to sleep.
Long pants, long sleeves, gloves.
Gloves. I did gloves. Gloves to protect your hands anyways. But
yeah.
And a head net was
essential.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guys, here's what really happens when you sleep in a debris hut. I know you guys have this idea of like, oh, I'm going to, you know, live like the pioneers or whatever. It's never as comfortable as your home bed. You will feel things crawling on you, like the little pitter patter of feet, like on your arm. You're like, what the hell is that? I remember one time I think you might've been there. It was, yeah, you were. It was the trip where we did the reunion trip at Slush Pond. Mm-hmm. I had a field mouse that was on my head, like yep. a little like kangaroo mouse in the middle of the night. Cause I slept under that tarp, the shelter. Guys, you're not going to sleep as well as you are at home. So you gotta make do. What were some of the items that you said? Cause you kept really good notes, and on that advanced class, we had you guys look at a trap book, and we said, here, you're all going to remember that it was like, here, try making these traps. You made this most elaborate trap, and you're like, whoever the author is, this book doesn't know shit. Cause you tried it like five different ways, and it was impossible to set with one person. Right. But then you kept notes of what worked. Like we only let the students carry one knife. Like you couldn't have 12 knives at your disposal. Go to your car and grab the one that was the soup du jour, right? But what were some of the items, if you recall, that you wished you had?
So I think a saw was one of them, like a folding saw, like a backhoe or a silky saw, because that was, I didn't have one. I mean, my knife was great. I had the school knife and mm-hmm. used it. So, I mean, I had no issues with that. It was a 4-inch fixed blade. Definitely a saw. I would have used like a multi-tool a little bit more if I had one. But then again, I could have had a saw in there. I'm trying to think what else I was missing.
Sleeping pad. I remember you saying that.
Oh yeah, sleeping pad, because I don't know, I just don't like sleeping on the ground anymore. I'm just too old for it. And, you know, just it wasn't not just the comfort more than the mm-hmm. insulation. It just shows, like, it shows all the things, like, you should carry, it doesn't carry a lot, like, be it a lot easier to carry a small tarp or a poncho than it was to spend hours building a debris shelter and grabbing a log that's loaded with yellow jackets and get all stung up and then have to be high on Benadryl for a couple hours.
Yeah. And that, guys, that, by the way, is a very real thing that happens with training. Like, as we push the envelope of training from basic to intermediate to advanced, there's always going to be a higher threat level or danger level to your health and safety. Like it just happens. I can't control where the snakes are going to be. I can't control where the bees are going to be. There will be an element where you guys are going to have to go in the water to acquire something or navigate something. I can't give it away. I can't control the flow of the water. I can be there in case you guys, I don't want to give it away, but let's just say that old lifeguard training might come in handy. The advanced survival experience is going to be one of those classes where people are going to say, I didn't know I could do that until I did. If you could design the class, Jer, what's one thing that you'd want to see people do from, because you've helped me teach the 2-day, this is now 3 days. What's something that you'd want to see those students do?
Jeez, I don't know.
I mean, you've done the Madison Parker thing with the slingshots.
Right.
So we're going to do some slingshot stuff with them. And did you do the Byron Kearns one?
I did. That was the knife only with a canteen, and he gave you a length of plastic and some cordage and a thing, a cup of soup to last you 3 days. And then he allowed us to dress a rabbit, kill a rabbit. And like Billy Capilongo was like literally sucking the bone marrow out of the mm-hmm. rabbit's bones.
Yeah.
Cause he was so hungry, a young kid that, you know, strapping kid that needed calories. Yeah, I guess like comfort thing. But so I think that I'm anxious to see how they're going to figure out how to cook catfish if we catch one.
Right.
Like I have an idea like how I'm going to show them that mm-hmm. you think was gross, but it's actually not. It's going to be interesting to see how they do with it.
Yeah. And guys, if you want to try cleaning catfish, you better have a pair of pliers and you better have a nail that you can nail that thing to a tree. That's the way I've seen it when I was a kid. Catfish to me is kind of like tilapia. No disrespect to catfish, but tilapia is gross. I'm never eating tilapia. It eats poo. Catfish, a little bit more of a hunter, still a bottom feeder. I want something different. But I think one of the things I want to do with this advanced survival experience, I want to do the jerky smoker, mm-hmm. because that's a fun one. It really shows you how you can, if you do acquire a good supply of food, how you can preserve it to extend the life of the food. I think a kill class might be in order. Kind of like what we did during breakout. You were there for breakout and you mm-hmm. showed them can you describe your chicken swinging method? Cause that was something that people had never seen before during breakout. And they're like, I've never seen that. It looks so terrifying. Like,
but it does look terrifying, but what you do is you grab the chicken by the legs and you're you swing it around in a big circle. And it forces all the blood into their head and it kind of like puts them to sleep and puts them in a daze. They're not like out cold or anything, but it just probably doesn't actually relax them. It appears that it relaxes them, but it makes them a lot more
easy to chop off their head.
Chop their head off or twist their neck, whatever your method is to kill the chicken.
Yeah.
And then we had somebody that like grabbed the chicken by the neck and started swinging it. And Like, I'm not a tree hugger or anything, but I don't want to make an animal suffer.
Yeah. And for the, like, just ethically, right? Like, you don't want the animal to suffer, but then practically you don't want the animal to suffer. Cause when all that adrenaline goes through their body, animal tastes like crap.
Right.
Now that's, guys, if you're paying attention, maybe we'll do chickens. Maybe there'll be something else that will be involved in the kill class. Might not be a chicken. It might be something that has more emotional connection to you. I can't say what just yet, but you'll find out if you take the advanced survival class. So, personal level, Jerry, any new excitement going on with you? Any projects coming up?
So I got to do some more stuff around the house. There's always stuff to do. I recently moved down here last August. I'm starting my chicken egg producers back up again. So we've got those going, and we had to get ducks. So ducks are just more pets than anything else. They're fun to watch. They're a little more social than the chickens are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably about it. Like, just keep them busy.
And now the ducks are following your daughter around, right? Because what's that called? Impression? Like, imprinting.
Well, it was imprinting until she decided to see if they could hold their breath.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she held one underwater. I mean, we caught her and, like, corrected her, but ducks really aren't as friendly with her anymore.
Yeah, by the way, guys, we're not talking about, like a mature kid here that is, like, a sociopath. I mean, she's a little crazy, but she's 3 years old, right? So you got a bunch of homestead projects going on.
Yeah, we're doing that, and summer's coming, so.
Yeah, we're going to get ready for that swamp-ass weather down here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and guys, Jerry's going to be teaching a bunch of stuff here. He's going to be traveling with us, doing a bunch of other programs, Responsible Citizen, and you name it. So when you come to Fieldcraft North Carolina, you'll get a chance to meet Jerry. What else we got coming up? We got skills.
Skills is next week.
Yeah, so I'm not sure when this podcast is going to come out. It's probably going to be after the fact, but sometimes it's good for trainers to sit in on other trainers teaching. And both Jerry and I, you know, are instructors here, but we get a chance to sit in with Rick Lofton. Rick Lofton is one of those dudes, you know, I've met him a few times. I haven't trained with him, but you hear about training with him and you're like, why wouldn't I want to learn from one of the best in the world? Like,
right.
Quite literally the best in the world. And guys, I'm not going to give up his background. You guys can look into him. Ideally you train under him, but let's put it this way. Of the shooters we have, he's probably one of the top 1% of the 1% of the 1%, like amazing. And he's going to be our skills instructor. You'll probably be tapped for doing the med class during skills, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I'm just going to be the, you know, Johnny student, and I'm just going to sit back and watch how you guys teach and hopefully not make a fool out of myself. But what other classes we have coming up? Lockdown
class is coming up. That's in June, right?
Yep, that's in June. So if you guys hear this before that, you know, Jerry spent many years on SWAT kicking indoors. Now he's going to be showing you how to reinforce them. And
not so much SWAT. We just got to kick doors in.
Yeah, that type of thing. So we got all sorts of cool stuff coming up. Bottom line, you guys should stay in the pipeline. You should still train with us. You can buy all sorts of cool gear, but, you know, training is something that you'll never lose if you have it. Got some awesome stuff, but it is Friday here. I got a guy dropping off another component to my Spiritus rig pretty soon. You'll see that a lot of our instructors here are rocking the Spiritus stuff. You know, you've been modifying yours, you know, for shotgun and then general purpose survival. I'm going to pretty much copy you. And then tonight, I think someone still wants to take me out for my birthday. So maybe I'll go out do that. But then tomorrow I got the drive, so I can't celebrate too much. So any parting words?
No.
Yeah, me neither. All right, guys. This has been your Fieldcraft Survival podcast for this week. I've been your host, Kevin Estella, here with Jerry Young, and we'll see you next time.